This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We got a fun show on tap for you today. We're going to talk a lot of hoops. We're going to talk a lot of baseball as well later on, and we'll do the night slate for this. And we're going to talk some hockey. Joining us on the Progressive Guest Line is Jonathan Davis from VSiN. You know him very well. He's going to join us for the first time. We're going to talk about moving on to the next round and that wicked, amazing Game 7 between the Blues and the Jets as well. So looking forward to having him on. Nick, we're going to start with the NBA. Two interesting games yesterday. I held off in the morning show on SiriusXM talking about it first. I can't hold back anymore. Pacers, Cavs, thoroughly enjoyable game for me. Really enjoyed it there. I am a Pacers fan, but I just thought it was a good game as a whole. I thought there was a really compelling action. I thought two really good offenses. The Pacers shot their minds out, and that in Cleveland didn't. And that ended up being the difference in the game. But I just there was a lot going on. I really enjoyed the game as a whole.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that you enjoyed this game, Jeff, as an Indiana Pacers fan. I can't imagine the reason for that. But yeah, coming into this series, we talked a lot about the leap up really for both of these teams. Cleveland playing this kind of just cooked Miami Heat team in round one. The Pacers taking on a one-man Milwaukee Bucks team, 1.5, I guess. We should give some respect to Gary Trent Jr., who did his best to bail the Bucks out in round one. But I thought it would be a bigger leap almost for Indiana to go from facing that Bucks team to now facing one of the most well-rounded teams in the NBA. I think the formula was fairly simple against Milwaukee. Just, either try to limit Giannis as much as you can or let Giannis get his and try to make this cast of no-name role players beat you. You can't necessarily do that against Cleveland, but the absence of Darius Garland, man, that was huge. And I think that came as somewhat of a surprise, right? We know he missed the last two games of the Miami series, but even Rick Carlisle, in his pregame media availability, straight up said, look, we know Darius Garland's playing, all right? Essentially implying that this is just gamesmanship by the Cavaliers. We know he's going to be out there. Garland does not end up playing. Who knows if he's going to be out there in game two? If he is, I don't think he's going to be at 100%. We're talking about a guy who hasn't played in a week and a half. He's dealing with a toe injury, something that's pretty easy to aggravate. And yet, you look at game one, you look at the updated series price, Cavaliers are still minus 210 to win the series. They're -9.5. For game two tomorrow night. That number, by the way, up to 10 already at the Circus Sportsbook. A lot of money pouring in on the Cavaliers. And I think the reason for that, Jeff, is you look at the shooting disparity in game one. Indiana, 19 of 36 from beyond the arc. I think there's a case to be made that all five starters for the Pacers had an above average game. You certainly can't say that for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They go 9 of 38 from three. Donovan Mitchell, 1 of 11. With no Darius Garland, we saw Sam Merrill move into the starting lineup. Cavs trying to get more shooting out there. I get the idea behind it, but Strus and Merrill is a little bit redundant to me. I think you maybe need to consider going with a more defense-focused lineup in game two in the event that Darius Garland doesn't play. And look, if you're going to start Strus and Merrill, they absolutely can't go 4 of 13 from three. They cannot. Those guys have to give you 6, 7, 8 made threes, I think, in order to justify that decision. So as we look ahead to game two, I think you would expect that shooting for Indiana to cool off, but when you look into the advanced numbers, Jeff, something we talked about a lot in that first round series against Milwaukee, the shot quality that the Pacers are able to generate continues to be really impressive. 25 wide open threes in game one. They went 13 of 25 on wide open threes, gave up only 11 wide open threes to the Cavs, and the Cavs only hit three of those.
Yeah, and then on the non-wide open ones, they still went 6 of 11. So, I mean, that kind of just tells you what a shooting night it was for the Pacers. It is unlikely to repeat. Neesmith was 4 of 6 from 3. Nemhard was 5 of 6 from 3. Those are, Mathurin, 3 of 5 from 3. I mean, Halliburton had this, sick step-back 3 late. That was kind of a bit of a dagger. Yep. He was only 2 of 6 from 3. The thing about Halliburton is, the mid-range game was going on. His driving game was going on. And he didn't really hit from three a bunch. He had a couple that were kind of huge, but also 13 assists, only one turnover. Mm-hmm. That's, I think that was the big thing is they controlled the ball really well. Only, at least early on, they ended up with 16 turnovers, but it really wasn't Halliburton that was the problem there. Like Miles Turner got forced in a few. Neesmith did later on. Neesmith had 5 fouls, but, Ben Mathurin stepped up, had a pretty big game. And that's been one of the other stories about the Pacers is their depth a little bit there. You mentioned the Cavs. We saw Sam Merrill start. He only played 18 minutes. And I think in part because they were attacking him defensively. I thought that was, he was kind of the weak point there a little bit. That's why we saw 30 minutes out of DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome, 29 minutes and 20 shots out of Ty Jerome. And I know he's a good scorer, but I don't think you want him taking 20 shots.
Yeah, maybe not ideally. I mean, he's had a really nice season. You know, a guy, if you're a college basketball fan, you, of course, remember him at Virginia, had a bunch of injuries to begin his NBA career and is now, you know, finally coming into his own. But you're right. I think the 21 points and the 8 assists look great. You don't necessarily want to have to take 20 shots to get to that number. Again, if Darius Garland is out tomorrow night, I think the Cavaliers and Kenny Atkinson do have to consider, you know, do you start DeAndre Hunter? Do you go back to your earlier season lineup and maybe throw Isaac Okoro in there? Again, it's a similar predicament to what the Milwaukee Bucks found themselves in the first round. But I think the Cavs are better equipped to handle these adjustments.
I agree.
Right? I think Milwaukee ran out of options pretty quickly. The Bucks ended up benching 3 starters by the end of the series. I don't think we're reaching that level of desperation for the Cavaliers. And I do think Cleveland does get back on track. They probably do win game 2. I will say that number sitting at 10, not knowing Darius Garland's status, that's a little sketchy to me. Because Indiana proved over and over again in round 1. And I know it's an inferior defensive team in Milwaukee, but this is a team that could consistently generate really high quality looks in the half court. With that said, some things you can hang your hat on if you're the Cavs: only turned it over 7 times. You know, it was still a competitive game despite the disastrous shooting night. You had 70 points in the paint. You won the rebounding battle. So obviously, you know, brutal to lose game 1 as a big favorite at home, but not ready to say the sky is falling quite yet for the Cavs.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell's not going to go 1-for-11 from 3 again. Either he'll make more or he'll take fewer. One of the two is likely to happen there. Series odds, though, still heavily slanted in favor of Cleveland, too. I did see that. That was interesting as well. We had a Game 7 last night. It was like the Game 7 on Saturday, though, that kind of, kind of disappointing. Maybe not disappointing is not the right word, but not much of a climax there. It was a pretty thorough win by Golden State. Not as bad as the Clippers and Nuggets game, where the Clippers just utterly no-showed. But it was the Buddy Hield game, of all things. 9 of 11 from 3, 33 points in total. Draymond was awesome, especially defensively. You know, Curry, you know, he had the most uneventful 22-point game, it felt like, especially because most of his impact was later. 10 rebounds, though, and 7 assists to go along with everything.
Yeah, this one actually had a decent amount of success in the prop market here. It played out pretty similarly to how I thought it would. I did think we'd get 9 threes out of Buddy Hield, but I really liked the under last night. I thought it was unlikely that Houston would be able to repeat the kind of offensive performances that we had seen in the previous 2 games. And I thought Golden State did a really good job preventing the Houston Rockets from getting out in transition. That was the big thing I thought that shifted in the middle of this series, is all of a sudden Houston discovered, hey, if we push the pace, it's going to be a little bit easier for us to generate quality looks. And the pace was way down. We were in the high 80s in terms of pace in this one on Sunday evening, and went back to the well on Stephen Curry, over 9.5 assists plus rebounds. That went over in the first half, Jeff, even when Stephen Curry was not doing much on the offensive scoring, didn't score his first points until under a minute left in the second quarter. But this is what separates Stephen Curry, I think, even from other superstar guards around the NBA, is he could score 3 points in a do-or-die Game 7, and his team is still leading by double digits in the first half, partially because he has quality help, but partially because he still finds ways to impact the game. He's not just standing around off the ball when he doesn't have it. You know, he's making the Rockets defend him for a full 24 seconds, even in the half court. He's running around. You got to always be aware of where Stephen Curry is, and I think that opened things up for other guys in this Warriors lineup. Got to give credit to Steve Kerr, I think, for making the change, for inserting Buddy Hield into that starting lineup, recognizing that they need more shooting if the Rockets are going to focus their defense so heavily towards stopping Stephen Curry. I also think, Jeff, you got to look at this as somewhat of a letdown for Houston, even if we all kind of saw it coming. Jalen Green, man, just a brutal, brutal first round series. You know, he was once again on a really short leash, got off to a rough start, didn't play a whole lot. You know, in the second and third quarters, they went back to him in the second half, tried to get something going, and just couldn't. I mean, he will close the season now, Jeff, having played the Warriors 12 times and scoring less than 15 points in 10 of those 12 games. Basically shot 34% from the field against Golden State over a hefty, hefty sample this season. So obviously the Warriors move on. They're now underdogs in round 2 against a well-rested Minnesota Timberwolves team. We'll talk about that series as the week goes along. Big questions facing the Houston Rockets this offseason. Obviously, you're the 2 seed this year. That's all well and good. But I think this playoff series exposed just how badly this team needs a more dependable scorer. Is Jalen Green that guy? Do you trust him to develop into that player? I don't know if you do. You're going to have a decision to make there. Do you try to swing a trade for Kevin Durant? Do you throw your hat into the Giannis Antetokounmpo ring? You got a $45 million player option for Fred VanVleet. Very pivotal offseason coming up for the Rockets.
Indeed. 23-year-old, 4 years in the league now with Green, too. So it's not like you can just say, oh, he's young. It's something they have to deal with there. All right, quickly, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Got about a minute left, Nick. Nuggets and the Clippers. Clips no-showed Game 7 on Saturday. James Harden, stop me if you've heard this before, no-showed Game 7 in his own right there.
Who could have seen this coming, Jeff? Who could have seen this coming? James Harden coming up short in a spot like this. And look, what's frustrating is, I think, for James Harden to have a bad game. You know, you go out and you just don't have it. You go 4-for-21 from the field or something like that. But 2-of-8. 2-of-8 is like not even making an attempt to leave his mark on this game. And it was late in the second quarter when things really got away from the Clippers. You wondered if that run was coming. It just never did. It never did. Clippers ran out of gas. You know, it was not a great night for Kawhi Leonard either. He only took 13 shots. I think he deserves to shoulder a decent amount of the blame. And looking forward now to breaking down this Nuggets Thunder series, which we'll do as the show rolls on. That's going to be a very, very interesting round 2 matchup.
Yeah, and in fact, we're going to be doing that next when we come up here on Prop Points. We'll be breaking down these playoff series. Stay tuned. This is Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Round 2 of the NBA playoffs has begun. We talked about Pacers-Cavs earlier. Knicks, Celtics, and Thunder and Nuggets start tonight. Knicks, they advance on Friday night over the Pistons, so they get a couple days at rest, at least for this one here. Interesting game here, I think, Nick, because the Knicks have been smoked by the Celtics in 3 of 4 games this year. The one game, the last game, though, went to overtime, 119-117. And the Celtics played most of their key players the whole game, except for Jaylen Brown, who only played like 22 minutes in that game. Interesting spread, you know, interesting spread for the series as well, but 9-point favorite for the Celtics. What do you like in this game?
Yeah, numbers up to 9 at DraftKings. And interesting to note that 57% of the money at DraftKings coming in on the Knicks to cover that number. I have a couple other ways that I'm looking at this game. You know, obviously the Celtics are well rested. They should be moved past, you know, some of the injuries that plagued them in that round one series against Orlando. So, yeah, I first want to focus on the pace, Jeff, or the total, I should say, 213. And you know, these are two teams that were bottom 5 in pace this season during the regular season. Two of the best teams at defending the 3-point shot. Boston, in particular, excellent in that regard. I look at the overall total. I probably stay away because there's always the chance with Boston that they have one of those shooting nights, you know, where they hit like 21 3-pointers. So I tend to just shy away from going under on any Celtics game. But I am looking at the Knicks team total 101.5. And I think this could be a spot, you know, where the New York Knicks do struggle. It's hard to have faith in the Knicks based on what we saw in that round one series against Detroit. And of course, a lot of credit is due to the Pistons for making that competitive. But man, even the games that New York won in that series, nothing was easy. It felt like the offense completely collapsed in the half court. They weren't able to get a whole lot in transition. Karl Anthony Towns felt like he showed up in every other game in the series. Mikal Bridges still like 85 games into the year, struggling to find his place night to night in that scoring rotation. So I would not be surprised, you know, going on the road to Boston, if the Celtics really come out with a big time defensive effort. You just look at the bodies that they could throw at Jalen Brunson. Jeff, I mean, whether it's Drew Holiday, who's kind of made in a lab to defend Jalen Brunson, or Derek White, or Jaylen Brown, or Jason Tatum, all these guys very comfortable defending Jalen Brunson. And I do think the Knicks have a pretty good matchup for Jason Tatum in OG Anunoby. He's played him well this season in their one-on-one matchups, but that's about it. And yeah, it's all well and good if you can limit Jason Tatum. What do you do with Brown? What do you do with White? What do you do with Porzingis? I mean, the Celtics have so many ways that they can hurt you. if you don't want to take the Celtics, you know, with the nine, if that's a little too much for you, I would look at Boston minus 4.5 in the second half. This has been one of the best third quarter teams, one of the best second half teams in the NBA all season. The Knicks, basically league average, essentially neutral in terms of their second half margin. We saw Detroit get after them in the second half a few times in round one after the Knicks were able to get off to a decent start. So I could see the Knicks, you know, especially if this is kind of a grinded out type of game early on, I could see them keeping it close, but I think Boston probably hits the gas in the second half.
Yeah, I think so too. I really wanted to say, like, be counterintuitive, say, okay, well, let's take a look at the Knicks side and you know, or maybe the plus nine. But then I just watched how they played against Detroit. Look, and it wasn't just that the Celtics beat them. It was every good team beat them. They were 6-16 against the best teams. I can't get there. So yeah, I like your hat, you know, the second half options, the third quarter options. I think that's a fun way to kind of attack it there. If you're uncomfortable with the number, it's mm-hmm. always good to have different ways to go.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And in terms of props for this game, a couple on the Celtics side that I like. Kristaps Porzingis over 1.5 threes. I mean, this is basically getting priced up everywhere, minus 166 at DraftKings. But don't mind, you know, taking a shot. If you want to look at three plus threes for Kristaps Porzingis, you can get that at plus 160. He has a lengthy history over these last few years of playing well against the team that drafted him, the New York Knicks. In 15 career matchups against the Knicks, he has 49 made threes. So that's 3.2 makes per game. I think they get him involved. And, you know, I love betting Derek White props. Jeff, Derek White over 4.5 assists. Like that one tonight.
I do know that you like that there. Let's follow up real quick. How many games do you think this series goes?
I think this is a 5-game series. I think it's a 5-game series. Would I be surprised if the Celtics sweep? Maybe mildly. I would be very surprised if the Knicks, you know, push this to 7, push it to 6. You know, I think the Knicks can steal a game perhaps on their home court, although they did go 1-2 at home in that Detroit series. I think their backs will be against the wall, though. I think there's a good chance this is 2-0 Boston with the two games at home, and then the onus is really on the Knicks to steal one of those and extend this series. Just too many advantages for me with this Celtics team at full strength. You know, again, they were able to survive some big time injuries in round one and still didn't really have much trouble with a Magic team that's really strong defensively. Jeff, there's a reason the Celtics are minus 800 right now on the series price.
Yeah, pretty hefty series price there. We're going to talk a little Nuggets Thunder and maybe a little overall championship odds too. But first, smarter bets start here and last all year long with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. Normally $240, now just $199. And when you sign up today, we'll throw in 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code PRO. Get 14 months of access to our daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, exclusive splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now and use promo code PRO to lock in 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, we got the Nuggets and Thunder. The Nuggets getting back in action, just a couple days rest after going a full 7-game grind against the Clippers. And other than game 7, it was a total grind in that series as well. That's got to be priced in, obviously, in the series odds and the game odds themselves, I imagine.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. I mean, especially considering the Oklahoma City Thunder, of course, swept their series against Memphis in round one. So you have a huge, huge rest advantage here for the Thunder. Now, I do wonder, you know, if there is a little bit of rust. You know, we're talking about a week plus since the last time OKC played an NBA game. And, you know, with the way game 7 played out, the Nuggets didn't have to overextend their starters at the end of that series. But still, I think overall, you know, a big advantage in favor of the Thunder. You know, looking at where the money's coming in, Jeff, very interesting. The great VSiN betting splits over at VSiN.com. If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you can check those out for every sport. At DraftKings, 75% of the money coming in on OKC to cover the 9.5 tonight. Just 53% of the handle on OKC at Circa. So perhaps some respected money coming in on the Nuggets. Would not be surprised, of course. You know, the Nuggets, in my opinion, do have the best player in this series, even if SGA ends up winning the MVP award. I think for me, Jokic is still that guy. So I'd be very surprised if this is just a full-on laugher, even though we know what OKC is capable of. Really good stat I came across, or actually heard, I should say, last night. I was on with Joe Serralo. He also had Grant Mitchell on the show, and he mentioned this. 14 of the last 15 teams to sweep a series and then face an opponent that played a game seven, have won game one. We're not talking about cover, but just one straight up. So you have to feel pretty good about OKC at least taking care of business just from a money line standpoint. In terms of some props that I'm looking at for this one, Jeff, I like Nikola Jokic over 22.5 rebounds plus assists. It's minus 105. Obviously, it's a huge number, but Jokic is averaging 27 rebounds plus assists per game against OKC this season. He's had some monster stat lines against that Thunder defense. Aaron Gordon, over 6.5 boards. Actually played this one at 5.5 last night, now up to 6.5, but you're getting that at plus 114. Look, if there's an area where you can exploit OKC, and there aren't many, it is on the glass. I mean, this was a team that was in the bottom half of the league in terms of total rebound percentage for the season. They're not as bad on the glass as they were last year. They have improved, but it's still not a strength necessarily for this club. And even if you look post All-Star, when they had Chet and Hartenstein mostly healthy, they were still right in the middle of the pack in terms of rebounding rate. Denver, of course, finished the season number two in total rebound percentage. So we like Jokic. We like Gordon. If you want to dig a little deep, Jeff, I have these labeled in my notes as my sicko props of the night, if you will.
I love sicko
take your
props.
Pick here. Alex Caruso, over 13.5 PRA, minus 105. Maybe a little Cason Wallace, over 10.5 points plus rebounds plus assists. I think both of these guys are going to play key roles in this series. Yeah, they're kind of, you know, what Chris Dunn was to the Clippers, who was a lot more effective early in that series than he was late. You know, as far as defending Jamal Murray, I think both of those guys end up perhaps seeing elevated minutes. They're the perfect matchup for Jamal Murray. And then lastly, I would lean under on the total, which is up to 226. A little bit of a concern for OKC being rusty. You know, Denver just played a game seven less than 48 hours ago. And, you know, looking at this from the Denver side of things, going up against OKC, that could be a shock for any team. I don't care who you're throwing out there. The level of effort, the level of intensity that they bring defensively, especially their guards and their wings, I think that could be a bit of a shock to Denver compared to what they were seeing at the end of that Clippers series. So those are my plays. I would also look at OKC -5.5 in the first half. One of the best first half teams at home, especially this season, +8.9 first half margin at home. Denver, not really a great first half team, especially on the road, just basically a net neutral in that regard.
30 seconds. Same question in the Eastern Conference. How many games does this series go?
Man, I could see it going six. I really could. Five or six would be the play. You know, OKC in six at plus 450 is an interesting play to me. Denver +2.5 games, plus 115. I think Denver takes at least a game. I would be very surprised if OKC just keeps rolling through a much better opponent than the Grizzlies.
All right, there you have it. Unlike basketball, hockey had two epic game sevens. Jonathan Davis joins us next in the Progressive Guest Line to break it all down here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line is the great Jonathan Davis. He's our NHL betting analyst on VSiN. You can follow him on Twitter at West Coast HKY. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today. Congrats on just enjoying having the game winner last night. And just enjoying it. It's a really fun game last night, that Jets Blues game. Double overtime thriller. Just getting to overtime was ridiculous.
It was two goals in the final a minute and a half or so, 2 minutes, and yeah, the tying goal with 1.6 seconds left. It was phenomenal. It was just a great weekend for hockey. And if you hadn't watched hockey before, and it was the first time you watched the Stanley Cup playoffs, especially, I think you're hooked after what we saw Saturday in Colorado, and then outdone Sunday in Winnipeg.
Yeah, Jonathan. So obviously both of those teams moving on. Winnipeg now faces the Dallas Stars. Game one in that series coming up later this week on Wednesday. Any initial leans for you when you're looking at game one? Very close on the money line. Dallas minus 115 on the road. When you look into the series market, we got the Stars minus 160 favorite, Jets plus 135. How do you see that one breaking down?
Well, you know, the Dallas Stars, you know, Pete DeBoer, their head coach, is now 9-0 in game sevens, but he is pretty much the opposite in game number ones. In saying that, though, I would be a little leery of playing Winnipeg in game number one. I'm just, you know, just not sure the health status of one of, you know, their best defenseman, Josh Morrissey, who left in the first period of game seven, and then Mark Scheifele, their their franchise leader in goals in the playoffs. Didn't play game six or seven. Don't know his status for game one. So the way I'm going to approach this series, guys, I'll pretty much play Dallas's team total over 2.5 whenever I can, whenever I get it at a good price. Because Connor Hellebuyck, the Jets goalie, although he exercised the demons of getting out of round one, he gave up at least 3 goals in 6 of the 7 games. He was pulled in 3 of the games, all the road games in St. Louis. So I like the Dallas team total throughout this series over 2.5. I'll also play this series separate bets to go 5 games at plus 260 and 6 games to go 6 games at plus 195. I think that's the safe way to go. I don't think we're going to see 7. I don't think we're going to see a sweep. So I'll take a small profit here with this series, you know, going no more than 6 games.
Yeah, Hellebuyck, you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned him. You know, what a turn. He went from being like the best goalie in the league for the first half of the season, Team USA goalie in the Four Nations Cup. You know, he was considered the advantage for Team USA, to getting yanked 3 times in that series against the Blues. At least he seemed like he found stronger footing in the overtimes last night, but still, just what a wild roller coaster for him.
It has, yeah. I mean, they were down 2-0 before a blink of an eye. There was a lot of thought, you know, would you pull him after they were down? But, I mean, you know, that's the guy you have to live and die with at the end of the day. He battled back after giving up those first 2 goals, and so credit him for that. And then just a miraculous comeback with that tying goal with 1.6 to go. So, new series, and now you've got 2 really good goalies. And, you know, both goalies, Connor Hellebuyck was the starting goalie for Team USA at the Four Nations, and Jake Oettinger was the backup. It'll be a lot of fun when these 2 teams meet. And actually, when they played games in Winnipeg, the Winnipeg Jets fans serenaded Jake Oettinger with the chance of backup goalie.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to VSiN and Prop Points. Take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Triple Crown, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number 1stbet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. So, Nick, let's talk a little baseball here.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. Big weekend in Major League Baseball. Had a full slate on Saturday and Sunday. A little bit of an abbreviated slate to begin the week on Monday, Jeff. No day games today. We got 10 games on the slate, 20 teams in action. I know you have some great best bets coming our way. We'll have our G-Bank best bets, by the way, to wrap up the show before we head out. And we will start with the Dodgers and the Marlins. Big mismatch on paper, Jeff. Dodgers minus 218 on the money line. If you like Sandy Alcantara and the Marlins, they're plus 180 over at DraftKings. What do you look at here? How do we handicap Sandy Alcantara in general, Jeff? This is somebody we've talked about as a big-time trade target. Yeah. There should be teams interested, but not the start of the season that you want if you're Alcantara or the Marlins if you're looking to build that trade value.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this on the RotoWire show on SiriusXM this morning, too. But what do you do if you have Alcantara in fantasy leagues? Do you start him? It's a 2-start week. He gets the Dodgers, which is about as bad as it gets. And then he follows it with a start against the White Sox, which is about as good as it gets, last week notwithstanding. It's still a team you really want to attack. You know, I think you can make a case for either starting him or sitting him. For tonight, I don't want any part of him. At least I don't want any positive part of him. There, the Dodgers smoked Alcantara out last week. And I understand there's some recency bias here. You don't really want to base it all on the last start. But for his career, they're hitting 328, 376, 569, and 137 at-bats. He walked 5 last time out. He's got a 14.2 walk percentage for the season. This is all common for pitchers coming off of Tommy John surgery. More so, too, for pitchers coming off their second Tommy John surgery. And that's the concern, is sometimes guys just don't come back from that second Tommy John. But the you know, control is like the last thing that comes back. The damage has been way worse on the road at home. Of course, that's because he's faced the Phillies and the Dodgers on the road in his 2 starts. His home starts have been against the Nats, the Pirates, the Reds, and the New York Mets. Meanwhile, the Dodgers, they're great at working walks. You see where I'm going with this one here. 10.7 walk percentage against righties. So I like the Sandy Alcantara over 2.5 walks at plus two. You get plus money for it too at plus 120. He hasn't, not all of his games. I think it's only 3 or 4 of his games have gone over the 2.5 walks, but this is one of them. So I think I'll jump back on that train. Meanwhile, the opposing pitcher, Ben Kasperius, is very interesting for the Dodgers. He hasn't worked more than 3 2/3 so far in an outing this year, but he was developed as a starter in the minors. He's been kind of that fireman so far. Really saved their bacon, according to Dave Roberts, last time when Tyler Glasnow got hurt. Might be moving into the rotation for a longer term coming up here. 23-3K to walk, 27.1 K percentage on the season, only 3.5 walk percentage. And the ERA predictors suggest he's been unlucky, if anything, like BABIP and things of that nature there, left on base percentage. So I'm going to take a play on 5-plus Ks, over 4.5, but 5-plus Ks at plus 130 over at the DraftKings Sportsbooks on Kasperius.
All right, really fun matchup out in the Bronx tonight. We got the Padres and the Yankees. Nick Pivetta going up against Carlos Rodon. Jeff, last week you mentioned Rodon as a potential long shot in the AL Cy Young race. You can get him 75-1 right now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. The big question here, though, Jeff, is will this game actually be played?
Yeah, it's going to be raining all day in New York. They might play through it. It may not be super intense the whole time. There's a chance, though, and the Yankees are one of those teams that usually will kind of, give it a chance. The Padres aren't coming back to town. You know that. This is their one time, at least coming back to town to face the Yankees. They may come back, they'll face the Mets at some point in time in New York as well. But I don't like messing around with rain games like this, especially when it's like long, steady rain. I don't play any of the pitcher props. I would like Carlos Rodon normally because of his recent form. Especially in Yankee Stadium, but the Padres are also top 10 in WRC plus and WOBA. But I'm just going with no play here, and I think that's important to say. Like, we have to have a play for our show, but I'm not going to play this game. I wouldn't play this game, and because of that, do what you're comfortable with there. But all the pitcher props seem tough for me because there could be like they could start it, there could be delays, they may just not play it at all. For me, it's a big, huge stay away.
Too much variance. Nothing wrong with that. Staying away from Padres, Yankees. All right, Reds, Braves, Jeff. Atlanta minus 148 on the money line. Total sitting at 8.5. This is Brady Singer going up against AJ Smith-Shawver. Some advantages here, certainly for the Atlanta Braves when you look into this pitching matchup. And I know that pushes you toward a play on the total.
It does. It does push me on a total there. A couple of things. The Reds splits. I was listening to JVT in the Money Moves, and he did mention the Reds have a huge road split and ironically terrible at home hitting wise because they play in one of the better hitting ballparks. The 3.48 WOBA, 120 WRC plus on the road. It's a little bit of noise though. Their last three road series were against Baltimore, which we've documented plenty of times having a woeful pitching staff. Miami, and they did get a good start in Max Meyer in that series, but the other two games, not great starting pitching there. And then Colorado, Coors Field, where the Reds just beat up on the pace-eating Rockies. So I think that they might be inflated in their numbers a little bit on the road. So because of that there, I kind of like attacking Singer, the Braves all time against Singer. I know it's only 60 at-bats, but they're hitting 300 against them with 674 slugging percentage with 6 homers. I think I kind of like the over. I actually used AJ Smith-Shawver a little bit in season-long fantasy. I did pick him up in a couple leagues with 2 starts this week, but I kind of like the over because of all these reasons. Over 8.5 with a minus 115. I think the Braves attack Singer, so I'll go with the over instead of the money line for the Braves, but I also think the Braves win this game too.
All right, sticking in the National League, we got the Giants and the Cubs. Cubs, of course, took 2 out of 3 from the Brewers in Milwaukee this weekend. Cubs minus 170 on the money line. Low total here at 7.5. Landon Roop going up against Matthew Boyd. And some factors at play here, Jeff, when you look at that total.
Yeah, there are. And a couple of things in mind here. The weather, again, always check the weather. 51 degrees today, wind blowing in from left field, 10 miles an hour wind. We know Wrigley wins. It's almost more than any other ballpark. It's definitely one of the huge affecting winds there. So when it comes in like this, it really depresses power stats. I think this is going to be a case there where the Giants, who are lesser against lefties to begin with, really kind of struggle to square up on Boyd. They have an 85 WRC plus against lefties, 291 WOBA. They strike out more against lefties. They walk less. It's just, even though, and it's, you can see it in the money line. You know, the Giants are 22-13, yet the Cubs are a pretty heavy minus 170 favorite there. So instead of betting the money line, I'm going to go the Boyd route here, kind of get behind him to get 18 outs, over 17 and a half outs. He's gone exactly six innings in three of his six starts. Two of those are at home. The Cubs bullpen is actually well rested, so I thought that might be a factor. But even with Imanaga leaving early yesterday, they haven't used like their key relievers in a couple of days. So that might change things up a little bit there, but still. At minus 115, I'll take the Boyd over 17 and a half outs. I also kind of like the under in this game at minus 122, under 7.5.
All right, real quickly, Jeff, tell me why you are on the Mets money line tonight on the road at Arizona.
It's pitching for the Diamondbacks right now. Ryan Nelson in for Corbin Burns, out with the shoulder. Nelson is not pitching well so far this year. He hasn't pitched well against the Mets in the past. The Diamondbacks bullpen is crushed. Long weekend in Philly. No Puck, no Martinez. Shelby Miller blew a save yesterday. Might not be available after just an arduous inning. So let's go to the Mets. I think they get the tack on runs late, even if it's close.
It's time for our G-Bank Best Bets of the Night. They're brought to you by G-Bank. You can get the G-Bank Visa Signature Card today. You know, most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances. That's even when you put your own money on the card. But no, not G-Bank. G-Bank treats gaming transactions as purchases, so you're saving up to 3% to 5% on cash advance fees on gaming transactions right there. Also, with G-Bank, you're earning 1% cash back rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, plus 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now at VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSiN.com/GBank. Jeff, your best bet of the night is?
It's Matthew Boyd on the outs prop there over 17 and a half. And I'm also going to trail JVT and take the Thunder minus 9.5 against the Nuggets tonight.
All right. I'm leaning Thunder on the spread as well. We talked about some of the ways that Denver could try to find some advantages in this game one. I do think rebounding is the way to go. The guy I'm looking at, Aaron Gordon, talked about the over 6.5 boards earlier in the show. I'm looking at Aaron Gordon over 21.5 points plus rebounds tonight. You can get that minus 130 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. So Gordon over 21.5 points and rebounds. Matthew Boyd over 17.5 outs recorded. Our G-Bank best bets of the night. That's going to put a bow on the Monday edition of Prop Points. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. He's going to have Greg Peterson giving his best bets in Major League Baseball tonight. Stay tuned.